Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 13th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, Pro Tennis, Holding Court. Illinois Women's Championships ongoing at Fairview Park. And there are photos here showing what's going on. Jenna Dean serves in the main singles draw during the Illinois Women's Pro Tennis Championships at the Fairview Tennis Complex in Decatur on Wednesday, June 11th. And there are, there's more coverage inside the paper that I'll get to. And she's on the court. Looks like she's throwing the ball up and is ready to serve it. And then there are two smaller photos that show spectators watching the main singles draw during the Illinois Women's Pro Tennis Championships at the Fairview Tennis Complex. And we just see people's backs. The view is from the stands watching the courts and the players on the court. And the third picture here shows Jada Daniel serving in the main singles draw during the Illinois Women's Pro Tennis Championships at Fairview Tennis Complex in Decatur on Wednesday, June 11th. And again, she's got the same kind of pose where her arm is up that she's just let go of the ball and her racket's ready to hit it. Community. I'll read more about this in the paper. In a minute, in a few minutes. Community. Students hand out hugs. Robertson Charter School kids give back through projects. Deanna DeBerry was a little startled, but in a nice way, when a large group of Robertson Charter School students appeared in Central Park carrying signs advertising free hugs and handing out cards with inspirational sayings on them. They seem like sweet kids. They really do, she said, and it keeps them out of trouble, added John Dupree, who shared her park bench. It gives them a good idea of what to do with the rest of the summer. The students are taking part in Robertson's summer camp program, and while the actual topic of the camp is science, the youngsters planted a garden at their school last week, and that gave them the idea to expand the garden to a community garden, said teacher Heather Heron. From there, it was natural to start wondering if there were other ways they could serve the community. On Monday, all of the kids got together in partners and researched all the ways we could give back to our community, Heron said. We looked at the options, and we picked a few, and we thought we could do, she said. They visited Fairhaven Senior Living, where they spent time with residents and gave them door signs they'd made for them. Then moving on to Central Park to hand out the hugs and inspirational cards, and then on to Skywalker International Sports, where they helped with cleanup and packaging snack bags for youngsters who attended programs there. Technically, these activities aren't science, exactly, Heron admitted with a chuckle. But if you think of science as the thing that holds everything else together, it works. The students enjoyed making the cards with the inspirational quotes, said Jayla Jones, and they weren't at all shy about walking up to people downtown and offering them hugs. It's for inspiration to make them smile. And rising seventh grader, said the rising seventh grader. And if somebody needs a hug or if they get a smile on their face, we give them a high five. We just had a customer. He was about to pay, and we said, no, it's free. And we had another customer. The customer is in quotes. We made her day. We gave her a card that said, follow your heart and believe in yourself. And she said it blessed her heart, and she really needed to hear that. For Zyra Karen, who is Heather Heron's son and will be in fifth grade in the fall, spending time with his mom and helping with the camp is important, but it's fun for him to spend time with other kids, too. People would say, thank you so much, or give me a high five or a hug and say, God bless you, and it's really fun for me, Zyra said. You know, just getting to walk around and hand out stuff to people just makes their day, said. And the photo here on A5 shows Noah Livingston giving Deanna DeBerry a hug in Central Park as part of Robertson Charter School's Summer Camp Community Service Project, while John Dupree, seated, and Jayla Jones look on, and we see the fountain in the background and other people in the park. And the photo on the front page shows Noah Livingston holding a Free Hugs sign made by Robertson Charter School students in summer camp, while Levi Nelson photobombs from the back. The students fanned out in downtown Decatur to offer hugs, high fives, and inspirational sayings on cards as part of their community service project. And Noah has a big smile on their face, and this Free is in multicolors, yellow, blue, red, orange, and pink. Free hugs or high fives, it says on the card. And several of the students are in the background near the fountain in Central Park. Also on the front page, immigration. Pritzker defends policy to Congress. Illinois governor to Congress, I will stand in the way. This is from Washington, D.C., but it's about the Illinois governor. Governor J.B. Pritzker defended Illinois' immigration policies while denouncing both the Trump administration's recent enforcement actions and the federal government's longstanding failure to enact reforms during sometimes heated testimony before a congressional committee on Thursday. Pritzker, along with Governors Kathy Hochul of New York and Tim Walz of Minnesota, appeared before members of the House Oversight Committee to discuss their state's immigration policies, which generally limit state and local cooperation with the federal government on civil immigration enforcement. This hearing comes just days after Trump, in an extraordinary display of presidential power, ordered the deployment of Marines and National Guard troops to Los Angeles to put down protests over federal immigration raids. All three governors at various times criticized that approach. At one point, U.S. Representative Maxwell Frost, Democrat of Florida, asked Pritzker and the other governors what they would do if federal agents tried to arrest them. Trump administration border czar Tom Homan has warned that anyone, including public officials, would be arrested if they obstructed federal immigration enforcement. Let me begin by saying, I have the highest duty to protect the people of my state, Pritzker responded. And indeed, if Tom Homan were to come to try and arrest us, me rather, I can say, first of all, that he can try. I can also tell you that I will stand in the way of Tom Homan going after people who don't deserve to be frightened in their communities, who don't deserve to be threatened, terrorized. I would rather that he came and arrested me than do that to the people of my state. Trump's administration has sued Illinois, Colorado, New York, and several cities, including Chicago and Rochester, New York, asserting their policies violate the U.S. Constitution or federal law. Heavily Democratic Chicago has been a sanctuary city for decades. In 2017, then-Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner, a Republican, signed legislation creating statewide protections for immigrants. The Illinois Trust Act prohibits police from searching, arresting, or detaining people solely because of their immigration status, but it allows local authorities to hold people for federal immigration authorities if there's a valid criminal warrant. Pritzker, who succeeded Rauner in 2019, said that violent criminals have no place on our streets, and if they are undocumented, I want them out of Illinois and out of our country. Illinois follows the law, but let me be clear, we expect the federal government to follow the law too, added Pritzker, who has been among Trump's most outspoken opponents and is considered a potential 2028 presidential candidate. We will not participate in abuses of power. We will not violate court orders. Committee Chairman Representative James Comer asked Pritzker whether Julio Cucol-Bol, the undocumented Guatemalan driver of the vehicle that killed Katie Abraham and Chloe Polzin in Urbana crash in January, had the right to be in the country. After offering his condolences to Abraham's family, who were in the audience, Pritzker reiterated that it is the responsibility of the federal government to enforce immigration policy. I have responsibility for the state of Illinois. I can tell you that it's the responsibility of the federal government to manage immigration in this country, Pritzker said. And if you're suggesting that the federal government didn't do its job, that is up to you. Comer then asked Pritzker if he believed former President Joe Biden did his job in securing the border. I was critical of things that President Biden did, Pritzker said. I think I've been very public about that. I wrote a letter to the president telling him that. Throughout the hearing, Republican Congress members clashed repeatedly with the Democratic governors. Pritzker engaged in a heated back-and-forth with Texas Republican Representative Brandon Gill on topics that went beyond immigration. Gill first asked Pritzker if he supported abolishing ICE, to which the governor responded, "No, I believe we need an immigration force in the United States." Gill then asked Pritzker if he thought transgender women should be allowed to use women's restrooms. He cited a post from Pritzker's Twitter account in 2017, 2 years before the Chicago Democrat became governor, that said, "As a protest against Trump's rescinding protections for trans kids, everyone should use the other gender's bathroom today. Hashtag protect trans kids." Pritzker questioned why the topic was being brought up. "Have you ever used the women's bathroom?" Restroom? Gill asked. "Not that I can recall, ever," Pritzker responded. After some more back and forth, Pritzker rhetorically asked, "So you're admitting that this is just a political circus?" Gill responded with another question. "Do you support Hamas's agenda?" "Sir, I do not," Pritzker said. "They are a terrorist organization." And the photo here on page A5 shows Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and New York Governor Kathy Hochul all are sworn in. They're from the back here. Sworn in during a House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform hearing Thursday, June 12, 2025, at the U.S. Capitol in Washington. And the governors are all standing. There's a fourth person who's not identified who's standing with their right hand raised, and they're facing the House committee. In local and state news on page A2, insurance plans could soon be required to cover hippotherapy. Excuse me. This is from Springfield. Under a bill awaiting the governor's signature, certain insurance plans would have to cover hippotherapy and other forms of therapeutic horseback riding in Illinois. Hippotherapy is a type of physical, occupational, and speech therapy where the movement of a horse is used to treat a patient's specific disability or disorder. The practice is used to treat conditions such as autism, cerebral palsy, arthritis, multiple sclerosis, strokes, head and spinal cord injuries, as well as behavioral disorders and psychiatric disorders, including PTSD. Marita Wassman is the founder of Ride On St. Louis, a nonprofit organization that provides equine-assisted services to both children and adults in the St. Louis area. As one of 5 credentialed and certified therapeutic riding instructors at the advanced level in Missouri, Wassman Stables has provided services to patients for over 27 years, the majority of whom, she says, are children needing physical or intellectual services. A previous patient of Ride On St. Louis was an 8-year-old girl with cerebral palsy who struggled to hold her head upright on her own for extended periods of time. After 4 months of treatment, Wassman said the girl's parents reported that she was able to both sit and hold her head up for over an hour when they went out to dinner, when previously she would rest her head on her arms for a majority of the dinner. "If you were to go ride a horse for an hour, it could benefit you exactly the same way as if you did a power walk for an hour," Washman said. As for people specifically who can't get that on their own, who are in wheelchairs or even if they are ambulatory but don't have a symmetrical movement, sitting on a horse that is nice and even is really going to help their muscles. During sessions, a licensed therapist typically works alongside a horse handler who confer with each other beforehand about the patient's goals and the variables that could affect the session, like the breed of the horse and the activities that would be most beneficial to the patient. Horses' movements are very different. You can have a horse that makes your hips and your pelvis have a lot more anterior and posterior movement, or forwards and backwards movement, or some of them are going to deliver more lateral movement, Washman said. So if you're working with a person with cerebral palsy who is weak in their spine, and they need to develop their anterior and posterior muscles more, you're going to want to make sure they're on a horse that has a movement that is more front and back. Beyond horseback riding, Washman said that there are a variety of other factors that make the practice effective. For some patients, being outside and partaking in a shared experience surrounded by supportive professionals can be emotionally uplifting, which she said may provide a sense of engagement and community. Another aspect of the services sometimes involves overcoming fear for patients with anxiety, Washman said. Since horses are large, intimidating creatures, overcoming a fear of the horse as well as engaging in and developing skills related to riding can help specific patients with self-esteem. Equine-assisted service specialists like Washman also report that horses seem to have a calming effect on patients, which Washman attributes to their heart rates. Because they're such large animals, horses have lower heart rates than humans, which she said soothes both humans and animals near a horse. A lot of times people's breathing will kind of relax and slow down when they're near or around the horses, she said. Some patients may not ride a horse, but instead will simply interact with one during their session, she said. Occupational therapists may choose to treat a patient's physical mobility by brushing a horse, especially when other forms of typical treatment aren't working. It's kind of like baking, Washman said. When you're baking, you use flour, sugar, salt, water, milk, or whatever in so many of your baking recipes, but you don't know what the outcome's going to be unless you specifically have your recipe. You could make pancakes. You could make crispy cookies. You could bake chewy chocolate chips or whatever. It's the same thing with equine-assisted services. What specific goals and objectives you have for each of those specific riders breaks down to your lesson plans and your treatment plans for and everything that you're writing to try and help that person. She told other previous patients' stories. One who quickly attained results after previously making little progress in traditional therapy settings. The patient's mother goes, "We did 8 years of physical therapy. Then we came and started doing physical therapy on horseback, and we achieved so much more in 6 weeks than in 8 years," Washman said. Washman said the insurance aspect of equine-assisted services has always been a point of contention for stables and their therapists in the past, as some insurance companies have fought compensating therapists for their hippotherapy services. At stables, where other services are offered, she said patients and their parents can often get confused about what services insurance will and won't cover. For services that are not involved with an occupational or physical therapist, speech therapist, or mental health professional, you cannot bill insurance, she said. There's a lot of stables out there that don't employ therapists, but still provide services. Senate Bill 69 passed the Senate unanimously in April, as well as the House in late May on a vote of 78-33. It will become law if signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker. And the photo here is captioned, "A measure awaiting Governor J.B. Pritzker would mandate that certain insurance plans cover hippotherapy and other therapeutic horseback riding treatments. But the picture is of a young woman standing at the neck of the horse with her arm up on the horse's back, and the horse's head is coming around the back of the young woman. It's a very nice picture of the two, the horse and the young woman. Decatur man sentenced for stabbing attack. Quincy Thompson stared straight ahead with no expression throughout the disposition hearing to decide his fate on Thursday. Thompson, 45, was found not guilty by reason of insanity at a stipulated bench trial on May 30th of the attempted murders of his mother and her husband, both 72. According to reports of the incident, which occurred September 14th, 2023, the husband had gone to the kitchen for coffee when Thompson arrived with a knife and attacked him. The mother had heard the screams and came to her husband's aid, and Thompson attacked her also, leaving both of them with multiple stab wounds to their heads, necks, backs, hands, and faces. The husband's nose was partially separated from his face. The attack, according to testimony, was unprovoked and there had been no previous altercation. Before passing judgment on the case, Judge Thomas Griffith allowed family members of victim Ernest Booker to read victim impact statements. Thompson was remanded to the custody of the Illinois Department of Human Services, which is required to perform an initial evaluation of his mental health and provide a report to the court on August 7th. After that, Thompson will be reevaluated every 90 days, and if found competent, one of those evaluations could be released. The longest he can be held in custody is the maximum sentence for the crime, 30 years, served at 85%, or 25 and a half years. Booker's family, who attended the hearing and have been present at every court date, are not happy with the outcome. In their victim impact statements, they described Booker's injuries and long hospital stay, as well as the lasting effects he has experienced since the attack. Booker himself said following the hearing that he is in constant pain and that doctors have told him, "I have to learn to live with it. He used to mow my grass and he used to do things for us, and he can't do that anymore," said daughter Eucordis Booker. "The future," she said through tears, "is in God's hands." One of the family's fears, said daughter Trenika Woods, is that if Thompson is released, Ernest Booker and the rest of the family will not be safe from him. "The attack has left deep emotional scars in addition to the physical ones," she said. "And Booker no longer feels safe. My dad had never hurt anyone," Woods said in her own victim impact statement. "This wasn't just an attack. It was a violation of every sense of safety, love, and trust." Thompson's mother also had attended every court hearing, including the one Thursday, Woods said, and is supportive of her son, which the family understands, but it makes for a tense relationship between her and Booker's children and their spouses. Booker said he and his wife are still together, for now. Grief unites families in East St. Louis. Event brings gun violence awareness. East St. Louis. It wasn't easy to pick herself up after her son, Aaron Prayer, was shot and killed on June 4th, 2018, but Skyla Ponell managed to claw and scratch herself forward, and she's been on a mission to get the guns off the streets. Ponell hosted the Wear Orange National Gun Violence Awareness event in East St. Louis last weekend to bring light to the suffering of families in the aftermath of senseless killing. Those who participated came from Illinois and Missouri and from black and white families. Some have seen their loved ones' killers put away, while others are still awaiting justice. What united them is grief. They wore orange in memory of Hedaya Pendleton, a 15-year-old from Chicago who was fatally shot in Kenwood in 2013. Friends and family chose the color as their symbol because Hunters wear it to protect themselves and signal to others, don't shoot, according to the Wear Orange website. Pawnell said it doesn't matter where you live, what color you are, whether you're young or older. A young or older parent, the pain and agony caused by gun violence is all the same. It's like I can't catch a break in my life for real, she said. Each time I hear somebody losing their child to violence, I can relate to their pain and agony. Every day someone is getting shot. Enough is enough. Saturday's four-hour event included speeches from city officials and citizens, as well as victims' families. A panel was assembled to talk about the violence and address what they believe needs to be done to make it stop. I don't see an end to gun violence. As long as they sell guns, there will be some gun violence, and we can slow it down, said community activist Terry T-Baby Jenkins. Pawnell said the law enforcement officials wants the law enforcement officials to find and arrest these people. She wants the court system to levy the stiffest punishments allowed by law. What I personally have been going through has been hard. If my son was here, I don't think it would be as hard for me, she said. 23.5 million dollar settlement reached for victim's family. Worker killed in fall at construction site. This is from Chicago. Family of a technical surveyor killed last year after falling more than 100 feet from scaffolding at the in-progress construction site of a cancer research center at University of Chicago Medicine, reached a $23.5 million settlement with two construction companies, the family's attorney announced this week. The family of David O'Donnell filed a wrongful death lawsuit last June after he fell about nine stories during high winds. O'Donnell, 27, died from the fall, while his co-worker, Jeffrey Spierka suffered injuries his attorneys call severe, life-altering physical and psychological trauma. Spierka family's lawsuit against the companies is ongoing. The profound loss of the O'Donnell family have endured following David's tragic death is truly unimaginable, said attorney Louis Anthony Cairo in a news release. We sincerely hope that this settlement provides a foundation for healing and allows the family to begin moving forward. Cairo said that the two companies named in the lawsuit, the general contractor, Turner Construction Company, and a subcontractor in charge of erecting the scaffolding system, adjusted concrete construction, resolved the case during a full-day mediation session, avoiding a protracted and costly litigation. A spokesman for Turner Construction said the company extends our deepest sympathies to the O'Donnell family, adding, out of respect for their privacy, we will not comment further. A representative for Adjusted Concrete didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. The lawsuit filed in Cook County Circuit Court had accused the companies of not taking proper safety measures and putting workers in danger through a series of negligent and careless acts. Cairo said preliminary investigations indicated serious deficiencies in the scaffolding system, which was designed to withstand winds of up to 85 miles an hour, but failed due to a corner separating when gusts hit 44 miles an hour. Attorneys previously said the southwest corner was held together with a piece of plywood with nails on top. O'Donnell was raised in Oak Forest and is survived by his parents and three brothers. One of his brothers described him as wicked smart and immensely funny, saying he enjoyed golf, camping, the White Sox, and the Chicago skyline. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 13th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.